Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Wars. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Ahsoka, Season 1, Episode 3, Part 3, Time to Fly. Aaron, I can only presume it's time to fly because that's what they do through 99% of this episode.
Yeah.
In various ways. What'd you think?
Man, so this felt so much like a jukebox Star Wars episode. Like,
I kept expecting to see Luke Skywalker come out and say, hey, that's my move.
No, seriously, is there a single new idea or even sequence of visuals or like anything other than Ahsoka being outside of a starship deflecting, which I think was used in the EU by like Luke and Mara Jade,
which is absolutely absurd. To me, the star whales are new, so that was kind of cool. But to people who've seen Rebels, they're not new, right?
Right, right. And they were entered. That's the shit when I'm like, oh, Cthulhu monsters, when I saw them in the hyperspace of last season of Mando.
Yeah.
So the fucking space whales are here to stay. Yeah, I mean, and there's probably some charms here for people that are huge Rebel fans. Like,
oh, yeah.
But, like, you know, this obvious fan service I don't get. Like, when some green-haired kid comes bouncing in, it's like, hey, Mom, I want to be a Jedi. It's clearly just whole history there with her having a husband who was a main character, and he was the Jedi Master of Ezra, and they had a child. And it's like, but me, it's like, it's just some random green-haired kid ran in and said, hey, look at me. So I didn't think, the thing I can say about this episode is it's mercifully short. It's like way less than 30 minutes by the time you back out the absurdly long credit sequence, and then the international titles, and then the previously ons. Like, I don't know that this is like a 25-minute episode, but they clearly, it's one of those things where it feels to me where if they did the next episode with the plot, they'd have an hour and a half episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have anything to do but get them from point A to point B and tell a little bit of world build. But even then, it's like, oh, wow, a New Republic senator who's kind of like got imperial shifting sympathies. Jeez Louise, I've never fucking hated a Bothan senator like that before. Like, it's just,
sure.
Like I said, it just feels like Filoni. And we got some feedback on this. We actually got some really thoughtful feedback by a 23-year-old Star Wars fan that I want to read. But this is the kind of thing I'm that's like, I guess, the worst case for Filoni. Instead of a guy who, you know, I just always compare it to the Marvel side of things, where it's like you got guy like Kevin Feige, who not only is a scholar of these works and has a deep affection for it, but also has an eye towards like, how can I fit all of the best of the last 30, 40 years in like a sequential building order and with like a different, and I just don't, still to this day, if Favreau and Filoni are the future of Star Wars, I don't know that it's a super bright future because I've yet to see them do, and this is Filoni's, you know, supposedly magnum opus character. So it's like, this episode felt like it was aiming for Mando and was like dipping to Book of Boba levels to me. What did you think of it?
Look, I really don't like Book of Boba Fett. This is better than that, in my opinion.
I mean, it didn't have rainbow colored landscapes.
Cherry painted.
They didn't have the mopeds. Fucking bionic Power Rangers, sure.
Right. I think it's better than that. It's not like blowing my mind or anything, but it's serviceable in the way that like half of Mando is kind of just serviceable. I think there are some exceptionally dumb things in here. There's a lot of questions I have about just canon. Like, I don't know the state of Star Wars right now, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm looking at things going, I thought this was this other way. Why is this thing in here? I thought it was something else, and we'll talk about those when we get to them specifically, but some of that stuff is throwing me off and maybe making me like the episode less, but maybe not, because there's not a lot going on here, right? Like, half the episode is an action scene, which is just resolved by them hiding in the forest. I mean, they get a little bit closer to their goal here, and that's kind of, I guess, a plus, because a lot of the times you'd have the opposite happen in The Mandalorian, where they go on a mission and it would be completely off the rails and it would just kind of lead them nowhere and maybe even get their ship destroyed and then they'd have to find a new one. So it would prolong everything. So, I mean, they're moving the plot forward and I'm grateful for that. It's just, is this doing much for me? Not really.
Yeah, I mean, we don't fundamentally know anything more about the state of the world than we did the last episode. We know that the Ring of Zion, or whatever the hell it's called, Scion, was an incomplete structure. It was going to jump to another galaxy and find Thrawn. And at the end of this episode, we know, confirmed by Hyong, that it's like...
The only thing that's changed is that our main characters now know, right? So hopefully that will move us forward next episode. I'm with you. It's not the best episode of Ahsoka. The first two were better, but... See how it shapes up next time.
All right. Are we ready to get into it?
I am, yeah. We're not interested in Jedi protocol. We'll be right back. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. It's time for your training, Padawan. Here's more Tribe of Two. Start off with Sabine practicing her martial arts skills with Huyang. Luke Skywalker comes out and says, hey, come on, guys. I did this 40 years ago. No, he doesn't.
Aren't you supposed to be wearing a white toga and tan pants for this? Like,
yeah, can we get a quipping Han Solo in the background talking about blasters and lightsabers? She does all right, but she's rusty. And Ahsoka, you know, says, ah, your Mandalorian skills aren't enough. You got to open yourself to the Force. And then, you know, does the Luke Skywalker thing, practices while blinded, and beats her with a stick a bunch. That's what I'm getting. This is just payback. This is torture.
Yeah, if you take the scene in the Millennium Falcon with Obi-Wan and Luke Skywalker, you play it at 0.5x speed, and then you you make Obi-Wan into the battle droid and you give him a wooden stick. That's the scene. I'm like, well, I was watching it. I'm like, well, surely they'll cut, like, you know, it's a joke that it's like, this is all Jedi. We saw the fucking younglings in the prequels with the goddamn blast helmets on their head, you know, dodging these things. Like, this is just like, surely we'll just, you know, diagonal slash cut wipe to the next thing. But no, we get treated to like 5 minutes of this thing. It's excruciating.
Yeah, that's the only really offensive part, because I don't mind the callbacks, right? Like, this is a universe with its own customs and practices. And so it would make sense. A lot of people do the same things. But to see it over and over again in detail, it's like,
It's a little, you know, and there's some things that's like can get... there's some things you have to observe for form. Like, you know, if you got a Batman movie, you're probably going to see a rose hit the pavement with a string of pearls, okay?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But on the other hand, we're living in the era where it's like, do we really need to see Crime Alley in every fucking Batman movie? And it's gotten to be like, you kind of groan and roll your eyes. Star Wars is getting to that pace. And it's like, you know, it's like, this is what, like, I don't know. Because, like, they are telling me something that I don't know about Sabine, which is, or they're reinforcing things that I'm appreciating about her, which is she's got a lot of, you know, she's impulsive. She's got that Mandalorian, not the kind of like stoic Mandalorian, but like the kind of loose cannon, the you know, angry Mandalorian energy. And that's not something that mixes the Jedi, you know, and it's Ahsoka. They're telling a story of, like, you know, she progressively gets angry and more frustrated at her inability to block Ahsoka. And then she starts getting better at it. And Ahsoka cautions her. It's like, yeah, that's the quick way. But again, this is Star Wars 101. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, give it your anger, your hatred, you know, brings power.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, I could say it's like, well, they're making this for like my son, except for my son's not watching this show. So,
yeah.
Well, because he's outgrown Star Wars, to my chagrin. Yeah,
yeah. I found it interesting that they're practicing on essentially holograms that have no mass, and so like the swings just go right through them, and they're just sort of detecting the angle of the swing, probably the velocity of the swing, all those sorts of things. Which I was thinking about it, that kind of makes sense with a lightsaber, although presumably a lightsaber is used to fight other people with lightsabers, so you do want something to hit up against, right? But also, a lightsaber goes through flesh without any resistance, so are they just teaching her to slaughter innocents, like people who can't put up a fight?
I think it's more like, it looked like it was like looking at her edge alignment is what I was getting at, because you know, that's something that
is there an edge on a lightsaber?
That's what I'm saying. It's, and that's where you get, you know, you can't exactly adapt one-to-one any one martial art, sword art to lightsabers, because they're just fundamentally a different thing. And it's also like when they're talking about this the lightsaber kata, and she name checks Itachi, which I'm like, huh, I wonder if that's some kind of Terrace, Masters of Terrace Kasai or whatever the hell that game was, the reference. But it's apparently this is a real life Japanese, like a legendary Japanese swordsman who's blind. And there's a bunch of legends and stories about them. They've been adapted into samurai movies and in Japan cinema. And it's just like, it's weird. Right?
To have a name check from our galaxy, from our time, in a
if back in the Solo movie, if Han Solo is learning how to shoot his DL-44 and Lando comes up and is like, let me show you the John Wayne method.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the fuck?
That's,
you know, super weird. I don't know. It is. But it's, maybe they're saying it's like, okay, a lot of Star Wars underlying, like, mysticism and sort is directly influenced by the East, like, you know, Eastern cinema, Eastern religions. So it's like, yeah. This is, it's not like, I don't think you pull 100 Star Wars fans. I don't think 95 of them know. Oh yeah, Satachi is the blind swordsman of Jedi. So it's like, maybe it's one of those things where it's like, we're giving a nod to the influences and not, it shouldn't be jarring.
Yeah, potentially. I have some in-world stuff that's a little jarring here. And maybe people who are very familiar with the latest, you know, canon of Star Wars can tell me. I thought lightsabers were extremely personal to a Jedi. Like, they build their own lightsaber. They have their light, like in Full Metal Jacket, you know, this lightsaber is mine. There are many like it, but this is my own, whatever. I thought it was more of that, but I looked in the little closet here that she's got. You've got all these, you know, light emitters, hologram things that Huyang's holding. And then you've got three lightsabers just on a rack in that compartment. She's only got two hands.
And she uses both of them almost all the time.
Is Huyang a Jedi?
I don't know. I guess, like, my thought is that that's probably, like, spares or training stuff.
I didn't think Jedi had spare lightsabers. I thought they had their lightsaber, and that was it.
Like, had Luke's or, like, Anakin's rolling around in the chest, and he had his
Jedi
training.
So this might be another Jedi's saber?
Yeah, I think so. Like, or there might be some cheap, like, what do you give a three-year-old Padawan who wants to wave his stick around and block the stun droids, you know?
Give him a wooden stick.
Does he make his own fucking lightsaber off the bat, or is there like a training lightsaber?
Yeah. Yeah, you give her the Sabine stick.
All right, we're really picking the nits at this episode.
I don't know, I'm curious. Maybe this is a Rebels callback. Maybe she like, or a Clone Wars callback. Maybe she got a saber from some other Jedi that she's been holding on to. I don't know.
She got Obi-Wan gave her all of General Grievous's supply.
There you go.
And
he's the guy who can have a rack full.
She's been parting them out and replacing them as she's done her Jediing, but she's still got
sure,
couple hanging around.
The lens gets scratched. Your lightsaber's leaning a little to the left. You just go grab one of Grievous sabers, swap it out.
Yep.
All right, let's go over to Hera meeting with senators and Chancellor Mon Mothma via HoloZoom. She reports what happened on Corellia and says she believes that Thrawn's allies are looking for him. And she wants to send the fleet to Danab to investigate, but she gets denied despite, and maybe because of her personal connection to Thrawn through Ezra. And then Mon Mothma just says, give us a minute. She might try and convince him, but she doesn't.
Yeah. So I understand that this is the uncle of a major the Rebels character.
This and Siono guy?
Yeah, and he was always kind of like anti-rebellion, like don't get involved in that. It's troublesome business. It seems like he's still not exactly pro. He's just a shitter. Like if you're familiar with the EU, he reminds me a lot of the Borsk Faelia. I think is how he pronounces a Bothan who just was always there to make Princess Leia and Mon Mothma and Luke Skywalker and especially Admiral Ackbar, like all the heroes of the rebellion that we liked, he was all there to like shit on them. And he was the civilian and soft hands and would lie and manipulate. And like, it's just this character in human form, it seems.
Yeah, seems like an opportunist. You know, he sits back, he waits to see how things are going to shake out, and then makes his move.
And it's all this false dichotomy shit. It's just like 8-year-old writing. It's like, okay, the general comes and requests to take her fleet to investigate this thing. And apparently it's binary. You can do nothing or send the fucking Grand Republic fleet. There's no, can't dispatch a team of rebel spies, can't dispatch a commando unit, can't
probe
do a
droid maybe.
Send a couple probe droids. It's just, nah, well, fuck yeah, fuck it. Yeah, I mean, we had some Imperial sympathizers shipping off giant warp cores to God knows where, but like, it's just like, damn. And it's like, it didn't have to go anywhere because obviously Ahsoka's still going to go, but like, just so I don't feel stupid, I just watched Andor less than a year ago, for God's sakes. It's like, it's just on so. And the thing is, like, I think you can tell Andor level stories like aimed at, it doesn't have to be that mature and like spy and like, you know, nail biting white knuckle spy thriller shit all the time. It's just, yeah, think it through.
Yeah, you just got to take a little care with the plot. I agree. The one thing I guess it does do is show like Hera's sort of impatience with the process, right?
Yeah.
Even as a general here, and I get the feeling that she's made a general, and I could be very off on this because I haven't seen Rebels, but I get the feeling she's made a general because she's kind of a hero of the rebellion, right? And she ends up in her position not because she because of like the work she did in the rebellion, not because she's good with like the official process of the New Republic.
Yeah, I don't recall. I've seen a lot of art depicting her, and I've never seen her wearing the like Purina chuck wagon dog food symbol of the five star. Yeah, what is that? It's like the Purina puppy chow symbol on her chest. So yeah, she clearly got minted as a general for that stuff.
And I think she's struggling in her new role, right? She wants to get shit done. She thinks, hey, we could just do this, right? Like, what's the downside here? But she's dealing with people who have egos. She's dealing with a process that is cumbersome, and she's just not super well suited to that. But she's way better suited to it than Sabine would be. So you've got like kind of degrees of tolerance of the system, I guess, in these different characters.
But she's also written like a 17-year-old, because like honestly the one thing she said I didn't like. It's like, I think this Ziono guy is an obstructionist fool, but on the other hand, like the like, were you in the war, Senator?
Yeah. Insulting him is not the way to win.
People that weren't in the war don't get to have any say on whether we get into future wars. What kind of fucked up bullshit is that?
There's probably some history here that I'm not aware of.
And it's not an uncommon sentiment for veterans in a vicious war to express, and I understand, I'm sympathetic to why you would feel that way.
But it doesn't win.
But it's not a point of view I respect, and it's certainly not something I'd like to see espoused by what I would call heroic figures.
Yeah,
And especially since it backfires, because they're like, you know, no, actually, we represent the citizens and children who don't want to get in another war and are not obsessed with the fucking empire and are not, have never gotten over the death of their friend that they, and it's like.
And that's the thing. She's so close to it, right? That like,
yeah,
they think this is just another attempt to go off and find
Ezra. She kind of proves their point, right?
Yeah, in a way.
So that's, but again, let's, I don't know. I don't know who that is made for, because it's not like, it's just you put her in that rhetorical situation so she can fail, because I guess it's that's what they want her to do. I don't know. I just find it like not super interesting, especially when this, it'd be, I guess it's like, surely in the way to becoming a five pip general, some of the like anger and impetuousness and whatever that her characterization of Rebels would be softened. It's just wild that, especially since it seemed like she was like the more calm or conciliatory character between the trio last episode, for her just to crumble with like very minor pushback. And so I don't know.
There's another line in here from one of the senators who says, we have former Imperials working in every level of the New Republic government, and everybody just kind of eyes everybody else in the room, right? Which I thought was kind of hilarious. Especially Mon Mothma seems very bothered by that, although she's kind of implacable. It's tough to really read her. I don't know if they're going to make anything of that in this show. I assume not. I assume that's it just kind of lead in for other shows that are taking that stuff more seriously, right? But we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll get to see this guy in Andor, and they'll add a whole bunch of depth to him or whatnot. But
maybe
they also like, she spreads this. I also think they're not doing a good job, if you are not familiar with Thrawn at all, of like explaining. Maybe they're going to leave that to the introduction, but it's like, I thought she was going to like sit down and tell the legend of Thrawn, like really put the fear of God into them about what he's capable of. Like, you don't understand. He's killed so many of my friends. Mm-hmm. Well, no fucking shit. He's a Grand Admiral. I bet he's got a body count in the millions. And you know what, Syndoma? I kind of suspect you do too. How many super weapons have you been? Like, it's like, this is fucking, like, okay, so we killed a lot of rebels. And, like, it's like, I don't know. I just kept on, I'm just disappointed. We're three episodes in and no fucking Thrawn.
And it would be a good idea to start laying that foundation for the character of Thrawn, because aside from his just general reputation in Star Wars,
right,
there's nothing to make me fear him right now. Okay, so he was an Imperial officer way back when.
Yeah.
Great. Why is he so dangerous? Like, staring at a map for 5 minutes and playing dramatic music doesn't make me fear Thrawn. Tell me about him. Show me why I should care that Thrawn could come back.
And honestly, I don't even know what characterization of Thrawn is in Rebels or the Clone Wars. Like, does he...
I know
is
he's nasty, but...
Like a student of culture and art, and he uses those unique insights to break down the enemy psychologically? Like, does he have a ruthless alien bodyguard that's personally loyal to him for a bunch of bullshit reasons involving Darth Vader? Like, what of the EU grain of this, you know, what of that DNA has come across intact in this characterization? I don't know, and I feel like maybe it's a little bait and switch. Maybe we won't get the Thrawn in like the final episode, and that'll be... Because I think this might just be the opening crawl for a Dave Filoni Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But
it's what...
I definitely expect them to slow play it, for sure.
Yeah.
That's kind of the hallmark of these shows.
But you have,
right?
You know, you had 27-minute runtime. I think we could give, in, you know, like a who doesn't want to see a 60-second... soliloquy from, or monologue from Syndulla, where she just like stares into the camera as it pushes in on her face and she recounts the atrocities of Thrawn or his diabolical genius or something other than shit. Yeah, he's the last Grand Admiral. It'd be a real shame if he came back and reunited the Imperial fleet.
Yeah, 100%. They needed a scene like that. It's the only area in which I think them having rebels around as part of the story is doing them a disservice, because I think they're leaning too much on that with Thrawn.
That's
having
what
not
I'm
seen it, Thrawn is just a name. He's not to me because of the EU stuff, but you know, Thrawn
but
to
then,
anybody who hasn't seen Rebels is just a name.
Yeah, and I don't even think like that was early EU. That was like the first trilogy off it. And I think we talked about last that you're not even sure if you've read that.
I don't think I've read them all for sure.
That was his whole deal. Like that was his well, I don't want to get into spoilers, but like, yeah, that was his big contribution to the EU canon.
Yeah, so, everything else I felt like I haven't needed the context for. Here, I feel like it's vital, and they're just not giving it to me.
Do you know what I love, though? I love a Mon Calamari sailor standing at attention in a Chris military uniform. I don't know why. I just fucking love seeing a Mon Calan uniform. It's badass.
It's that orange blue, the complementary colors of the orange and the blue. It's really good looking. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, it's like I always think of Ackbar. He's the old wise admiral, and I don't know. I can't get enough of Mon Cal. I keep on hoping that we'll get a primary, you know, like a Sabine Wren type of Mon Cal character in one of these live action. Yeah.
I really like the stuff they did. Which show was it? The one where they had the Mon Calamari guy who was in love with the captain, or the Mon Calamari captain who was in love with the human? Thorian? I don't know. It was some strange combination, but they showed like the whole bridge with the water capsule setup.
That was which on Mando, wasn't it? Was that on the last
that's
episode?
That's probably
of Mando?
Right. Yeah. I really love that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So more
Mon Calamari, please.
And then we get introduced to Hera's kid, Jason, who says he wants to learn to be a Jedi like his Aunt Sabine. And Hera says,
Of course you do. I honestly, when I saw this, because Jason, however you pronounce it, that's Han Solo and Princess Leia's kid. I looked into the Wikipedia and I'm like, jaw dropping that they had the temerity to have a child from another hero of the rebellion and call it just like, what?
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, they had kids, Jason and Jaina, or Jaken and Jaina, right? as I was calling them.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems a little filing the serial numbers off-y to me.
Would you believe me if I told you that this kid was half Twi'lek? He didn't get any of his mom's traits except for green.
Green.
Which
yeah,
is
green
stupid.
Hair.
His hair is green, not his skin.
I mean, are tails dominant? Are they a dominant trait?
Are tails hair? They're not hair. It's like, I don't know, this area
hair.
Of his head is
what
green.
Are they made out of? Because if they're made out of, like, keratin, then I could argue that, yeah, they are hair. Or horns.
I don't think so. I mean, they blend seamlessly into the flesh.
And they're wobbly. They're wobbly. But she's not a Twi'lek. Wait. Oh, no, she is a Twi'lek. That's right. I don't know what the hell Ahsoka is.
Tortuga or something. She's
they
a turtle.
Called it, which literally translates in basic to... fancy Twi'lek. That's what it means. Uh-huh. That's what it means in basic.
Yep.
yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the interspecies stuff works in Star Wars. In Star Trek, they always hand wave it as like all the kind of like bipedal, weird bump nose and ear species in the Milky Way were seeded by some previous civilization. So like we all have a basic kind of common genetic structure that you can have things like human Vulcan hybrids. I don't know.
Yeah.
Could you fuck a Hutt? What would that look like?
I mean, the Twi'leks have done that too.
A Wookiee?
Sure. Let's get a Wookiee and a Hutt together.
I mean, I know
just
you can fuck anything.
Hutt.
Can you get child? Can you fuck potato? Can you get child? Can a human get a child with a Wookiee or a how's that all work?
Yeah.
Apparently Twi'leks 100% work.
What's the best combination you can come up with? I feel like a Hutt is a good base. As a combination, a Jawa? A Jawa on a Hutt?
That's like, I mean, a Chihuahua and Great Dane? Like, how does it line up?
There's some artificial insemination happening, but you can make it work.
I mean, it's kind of like already fucked up that a Hutt has the hots for humanoid females. That's really weird. Uh-huh. It'd be like you or me getting a throne and chaining up a bunch of like octopus and slugs. Like, oh yeah,
bunch of Hutts.
Slimy bait. I don't know. They should knock it till you try it.
Not interested.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jabba.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess
the reasons people are going crazy is because this kid's father, Kanan Jarrus, as I mentioned, it might be Kanan, or might be Kanan, or might be Kanane.
Sure.
He's the husband of Hera, and he was, by my understanding, Ezra's Jedi Master, and he dies in, I watched this on YouTube, what I can only describe is an X-Men 2 Dark Phoenix deal. Where he's holding back this unbelievable wall of fire with just his pure mental will while his friends can escape and he heroically is incinerated while they get away. And then...
Should have had Baby Grogu on the scene.
Okay, so I'm putting this together from this other like 30-40 minute video that explains all Filoni's stuff and, you know, record time. I think he comes back as some kind of Force Wolf spirit.
Force Wolf?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, you... You transmogrify when you're a Force. I mean, I guess there's no reason you have to present as young or old Anakin. You could do either, I suppose.
The other thing I gathered about Ezra and his, like, is that he had this like animal affinity, and there's something about the wolf because these are Loth wolves, just like there's Loth cats. These are all from the Lothian. So it's like maybe if you have an intense animal connection, you'll. He'll reincarnate as a
How intense is his animal connection? Are we looking for other kids here?
He's out there fucking squid and slugs. That's all I'm saying.
Oh,
that's Jesus. The strongest animal connection you can forge.
all right, we gotta move on. Yes, this is just for the Rebels fans, right?
Yes. Yeah. This is my understanding of the canon. Ezra's a slug fucker. Next
right.
scene.
After the training, Ahsoka tells Sabine she did well, but she's not happy because she can't feel the Force. Ahsoka says it just takes training and tells her to start small, and Sabine practices moving a teacup with her mind, but she can't do it. I thought, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not familiar with the state of Star Wars. I thought you had to be at least Force attuned in order to wield any of the Force. I thought there was a blood test you could do to count someone's midichlorians to tell whether or not they could wield the Force. I didn't think it was just a matter of concentrating hard enough and training long enough. Am I crazy?
It's entirely possible that a good chunk of Clone Wars and Rebels dealt with Dave Filoni wrestling with walking the midichlorians back.
Possibly.
Because like, I
would applaud him the effort, for sure.
It's my understanding Ahsoka is not what you would call a Jedi. That she was kind of like drummed out of the Jedi for some bullshit thing, and when she was a Padawan, and then she was cleared of whatever bullshit Jedi charges are brought against her, and then Anakin offered to take her back on as a teacher, and she's like, nah, fuck this, I'm going my own path.
Yeah.
So maybe there is, you know, like,
but it was all after like Order 66 too, because I know she fought through that part like heroically, and amazing skills. Yeah,
because I think that was like the ultimate thing that soured her on the Jedi, the fact that it all went kaput and her master was like the most evil Sith in the universe. But
she ran away.
It's actually an open question. I had my notes is like, are we sure Sabine is Force sensitive? Because it was kind of kerfuffle amongst fans that they were acting like she was, and like not being able to move a coffee cup. You know, and you've got, again, you've got a droid that's been around for 25,000 years of Jedi. And last week he was saying, you are the worst I've seen in the last few hundred years. He didn't even qualify it. He's like, you're just amongst the worst Jedi or aspirants I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny where Sabine was kind of like, you know, being defeatist and leaning into what he was saying. And he's just like, I'm correct. That's an entire, you know, it's like this. He was just, you know, not trying to soft pedal it or because Ahsoka's leaning hard on him. Like, you really said that to her? And he's like, well,
it's true.
For 25,000 years, I've been looking at Jedi. What do you know about it?
Honestly, I'd be okay if they changed the midichlorian stuff because it was kind of dumb to begin with. It really removed all the mystery and interesting stuff.
Yeah,
from the Force.
I would love if midichlorian is seen in like IQ, where it's like, yeah, it's important, but there's like other different ways that you can be attuned to the Force. Like, what's your emotional intelligence? What's your street smart? What's your, you know, I
want to see
cool.
A street Jedi, somebody who's never studied but just has like, I don't know, an innate ability.
What was my Jedi master? The fucking streets. That's where I got my training. Yeah.
It's a hard force life out there.
It is a hard force life. I could dig. Honestly, yes. Paint with more of these gray tones, Star Wars, please.
And I think getting like the requirement of a certain level of attunement to the Force out of there is good. It's a better message than some kind of birthright thing, right? I don't really like that only certain people who are born special can do these things. I like
that special blood. The people with the special blood, and they're the ones that are saving us, and we have to put our faith in them that they're going to do the right thing. And there's bad ones, but you know, we got to trust the. Yeah, I don't know about that message either.
Yeah, it never feels good because you know I want to be a Jedi like Jason, but I wasn't born with midichlorian counts high enough.
George Lucas is just in the background like, I was smoking weed and angry about the Vietnam War and I'd watched a lot of Kurosawa, okay? Okay, I didn't think this all through, all right?
Well, that's what Legends is for. Banish it.
That's the thing. Like, if this is the guy who is going to do the second pass on the world and really, you know, kind of bring everything under some kind of stable direction, I just don't know. I don't know.
I like this change. If this is in fact a change, I like it.
Okay.
Let's go up to the cockpit where Hu Yang tells Ahsoka that Sabine is completely unacceptable as a Jedi candidate. And Ahsoka doesn't want her to become a Jedi, though. She just wants her to become herself. I don't know. You're not training her to be herself. You're training her to move cups and use lightsabers. She's pretty good as a Mandalorian. Be that.
Yeah. Do you need another Jedi? And they kind of hand waved her non-traditional Jedi status here. Because He Yang identifies that Ahsoka's not exactly walking the line as straight as she could.
Mm-hmm. So they're attacked by fighters. They find the Eye of Sion during this battle, which shoots a hole in their ship, and they're dead in the water. Shin, the fallen Jedi apprentice, is closing in. So Ahsoka goes out on the hull and does a lightsaber dance to distract the attackers while Sabine fixes the ship. Then they fly down to the planet where they lose their attackers amongst the Star Whales. I'm going to stop there for a second.
Beware the Sith. We will return. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you hearing voices too? Welcome back to Tribe of Two.
So the thing, I think the only new piece of information I learned here is that Morgan and Darth Grimes don't like each other. And there's some kind of jockeying, which is weird because I thought Morgan was the leader. It seemed like that Darth Swanson was subservient to her. Like he is following her orders or she's paying him to be loyal to her. So I'm surprised that like his acolyte, his Padawan is kind of kicking at the goads here with her, kind of antagonizing her. And it seems like not only is she trying to antagonize her, it's successfully. Like Morgan seems irritated and crestfallen that this young apprentice is getting her goat. But can we talk about the absurdity of this sequence?
The lightsaber dance? Yes, please.
Okay, that let's start there. The only reason the lightsaber dance has any efficacy at all is because the Sith get crazy violence horny to kill her with their starships. Like, if they just like, the Jedi's over on the left wing, let's shoot the right wing off. They'd be dead. They'd be dead. That ship was inactive. No shields, no engines.
Yeah, it's... So shockingly, one of the stupidest things I've seen in Star Wars in a long time. It's
like if this
asinine.
Was an X-wing, it would make sense because I would believe a Jedi could cover an X-wing. Okay,
not the slowest Jedi in the galaxy. I mean, she is going to take her. She's going to have to migrate to the other side of an X-wing.
yeah,
it's going to be a journey. David Attenborough is going to get in on the job, start narrating it.
I just think that, like, I don't understand why shows, and I've complained about this on several shows. It's something that came up in Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It's something that came up this season of Foundation, which otherwise fantastic shows. I don't understand why showrunners today tend to put the heroes in literally impossible to win situations and then have them win anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe Ahsoka and Sabine are going to die. So why? So like, why bother putting them into these, like, the way that they're going against this capital ship? These are huge turbo laser batteries. These things look like the size of the main turbo laser batteries of a Star Destroyer. How many shots can Ahsoka's ship take?
Yeah.
And like, I just see it taking so much punishment, and it's a big, it's not small enough to fight, so it can dance around. And I'm like, why do you have to get an arbitrary distance, like, to see, like, what did he scan in visual range? I could tell that it had an in, you know, it's like, I just don't get it. I don't understand why they had to get so close, why the ship had to take so much punishment, why as soon as it got disabled it went off their scopes.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe their scopes can't get a view of the inside of their own ring, but
that, I mean, World War II radar wouldn't have had a problem with tracking a large metal object that was fragmenting, and like, and like, also it's floating adrift by the Eye of Sion, but now Grimes comes in, it's like, you fucked up, you can't do the coup, it's you're gonna have to leave it up to us. Like, why doesn't she just bring her turbolizer batteries to bear and blow Sabine? It's just like, none of this shit made sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I think this is a really dumb sequence. I don't know why they needed to play it this way. I really don't.
So, we got to the whales part where she loses, they go to the surface, and they, because that's the other thing. It's like, that's essentially the asteroid chase with the Millennium Falcon and Empire Strikes Back, except for the living whales instead of asteroids. Mm-hmm. And then they just hide in a crater, I mean a forest, and shut down their power and their droids, just like Han Solo did.
Yeah, and it's a good move.
Yeah, it's a good move. And that's the other thing. It's like, I don't know. I'm willing. The thing is like, if it was at the end, it's like she's like, I see an opening, and she just dives for the forest. Like, why can't the Sith see that? Did their sensors not work through fog?
Apparently not.
Do their sensors work less well than a fucking Airbus does right now, today?
Well, it's a long time ago, you know.
That's true. They haven't developed radar. They just have hyperspace and lightsabers, but...
No, it seems like it's all visual-based, right? Once they lose visuals, they've lost them. And maybe the bigger ships have some sort of better targeting capabilities, but these fighters apparently don't.
It's like,
I don't,
that's
recognize
the, one thing,
the fighters...
Like, I kind of expect that. What I was getting at is, I expect this kind of shit because, like, the language of Star Wars is very World War II, and it's naval battles and it's aerial battles, and, like, you know, it's all about, if you can break it, that's fine. That's fine. But it's like, that was the last kind of insult on a just entire action scene that was very derivative and to my mind, boring, because there's no stakes. And then they get it. They just break. It's like, it felt like one of those things where it could have been an arbitrary length, you know. The droid could have gotten a scan at any time. They could have broken visual contact whenever the animators run out of budget to make rolling whales, and then they just land on the planet and the next episode's going to start.
Yeah, it suffers a little bit from that desire to get in some action just wherever they can.
Or a desire to not submit a 12-minute episode to Disney. And that be like, too. this is our plot. We need to, and Disney's like, are you joking? People are going to rebel if we give them this 12-minute episode. And it's like, what if I add 5 minutes of slow motion blind lightsaber and 10 minutes of meaningless sci-fi space action?
And Disney comes back and says, you know, we really like those map scenes from episodes 1 and 2. Could we get more of those? And they said,
say less.
Yeah,
say less, Mouse.
We'll do those next time again. Here's the one thing it does, is it traps Ahsoka and Sabine on the planet, right? I mean, They've got Balon out there, you know, combing the woods for them, so they can't really leave. Now they're stuck on this planet with this old, you know, Jedi, or not Jedi, but witches of Dathomir or whatever temple thing, so they can kind of explore the space a little bit.
Yeah. And the other thing I don't think we talked about that I think is a cool, because I don't know about these space whales, man. I don't know, especially since I think it's canon that the Old Republic figured out how to do hyperspace by copying the hyperspace whales, which I don't know. I guess there was a fair bit of copying birds' wings and like flight and whatnot and the attempts of flight, but it's just so weird that you didn't get to something through science. You got to it through observation of nature, which I guess is science. Anyway.
Yeah.
Science. It is kind of a, so if you grant that it's like you got hyperspace whales, I kind of think it's a cool idea that there are certain circumstances where you can have extragalactic travel. That was one extragalactic travel. Mm-hmm. As one thing I was worried about, it's like I thought they were going to just say you can just go to extra galaxies and that would really blow up the Star Wars universe. But yeah, it seems like they're saying as there are like game trails worn from millennia of these whales migrating through the galaxy. And if you know where they are, you can navigate through them to kind of take these hyperspace shortcuts. To make, mm-hmm. And it's still, you have to have an enormously powerful ring with enormously powerful engines and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, all right,
yeah,
that was pretty cool. I actually thought that was a fun new fresh Star Wars canon idea that I didn't find wildly offensive.
It does make me wonder how, you know, assuming they're going to have to go to another galaxy to find Thrawn here, it does make me wonder how Thrawn got there.
Well,
he spent years.
I have the answer.
Collecting enough hyperdrives and building a ring of his own to get him there, or did he just hitch a ride on a whale? I don't know. Maybe he, yeah, put a tow cable on
You're
a whale.
Actually so close.
And, get out of here. He put a tow cable on a whale.
Right, I'm going to tell you.
Okay, this is a spoiler, potentially, right?
For Rebels?
No, for Ahsoka, for people who haven't seen Rebels.
Do you guys
I don't give a shit.
Okay,
some,
you know,
people
what
might.
Yeah, fuck it, this is what this podcast is going to be. We might spoil Rebels for you, because no one has I need you all to take the pledge with me right now. If you haven't seen Rebels or Clone Wars, you have to pledge. If you're listening to this podcast, you can't watch Rebels and Clone Wars. All right,
I might watch them. I have to close my ears. Yeah,
how Thrawn and Ezra were lost is that Ezra used his Jedi animal summoning Aquaman powers.
Oh, no.
To summon a pod of hyperspace whales that jump through, I guess, Thrawn's Star Destroyer, dragging portions of it in the wreckage into hyperspace where they were lost, presumed dead.
How many of those whales did he have sex with on the way in?
I want to know how many
have, like, a Purgle human combo. How much of a Purgle will it look like?
I just think it's, I just imagine it like going down like Boys season 2 of the Deep, where he summons this giant whale and Butcher just power boats through it. That's what Thrawn tried to do. He's like, you going to bring whales to a Star Destroyer fight?
Mm-hmm.
It's
a good move.
That's how it went. That's how it went. The Purgles were summoned to cause,
and they got caught up in the Purgle current.
They got caught up in the Purge current. Yeah.
Okay. So he's stranded out there in another galaxy. Gotcha.
I mean, he's presumed dead. I don't know why you're assuming Ezra is alive and possibly stomping around in a fully encased Sith suit that disguises his voice as well. What?
Oh, I was talking about Thrawn.
You're suggesting such a thing?
Stuck in an extra galaxy.
Both of them dead. You're being reactionary. You're trying to waste New Republic funds. Good Lord.
Uh-huh.
You know how many Wookiees don't get free school lunches when we send a Mon Calamari cruiser to another system?
8?
17. 17 baby Wookiees going hungry because we don't have a Mon Cal cruiser.
It's a big, big lunches.
They do.
Yeah.
They really do. Okay. Are we done? Are we done with this episode?
There's one final scene where Balon orders, you know, his guys to hunt them down in the forest, and that's the end. So, like I said, they're kind of stuck there. We'll see how this all plays out later.
Oh, God, I forgot to mention this, and I'm probably going to get an onslaught of emails. The Jaken kid, Jason, whatever his name is,
mm-hmm.
Did I mention he's wearing a shoulder pad that looks just like his dad's shoulder pad armor? Like he wore a very distinctive single, like on like a fencing pauldron on a sword arm. And this kid's got the same thing woven in his jacket. So like the Rebel fans are really enjoying that detail. And I'd be remiss if I didn't include it. Should we do feedback?
Yeah, let's.
StarWars@baldmove.com is how you send feedback. Apologize, there was like for the first 6 hours of the podcast being in existence, I had screwed up the redirect because it used to be Mando@baldmove. And that shit was bouncing. So I apologize if you did get a bounce and you still want to send it in. StarWars@baldmove.com is working. Sadie was able to get it to work and said, just a quick note to say, you actually do know Morgan. Do you remember this? When someone prompted me, I did.
No.
She was the town ruler in episode 205 of The Mandalorian, where we first meet live action Ahsoka. Remember, she goes and gets that Beskin spear?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but so Ahsoka captures her, and Mando took her spear eventually, and that's how Grogu got his chainmail. As far as I know, Morgan isn't in the animated series. I don't blame you for not remembering Morgan. To prepare for Ahsoka, I watched said Mandalorian episode, but the very next day watching the premiere of Ahsoka, I thought the Morgan actress looked familiar, but couldn't for the life of me figure out what I'd seen her in and had to look up her to discover she was from Mandalorian. That's the thing, is like when someone mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, right. But otherwise, she was just the mini boss of the week, you know?
Yeah, she was in that walled off, like, temple looking thing.
And I thought maybe she was in the Rebels, but that's just because I watched that 30-minute primer, and like the Witches of Dathomir had a big run in that series. So I don't know if she was name checked or not. But next up we have Al Chalant, and actually we just served some dry pie because the primary contribution he gave is giving us the final disposition of Thrawn and Ezra in Rebels. He says, Ezra used his power to summon the hyperspace traveling whales to crash into Thrawn's ship over Ezra's home planet Lothal, where the Empire had a TIE Defender factory. The space whales crashed the bridge of Thrawn's Star Destroyer and zipped them out into hyperspace, leaving behind wreckage from the whales crashing into the fleet. That was, I appreciate that background. And that's why they got all excited about seeing the Purgles, because they guess they associate them with the their heroic battle and Ezra.
That makes sense.
Matt from Alberta says, I think the show did a poor job of setting up at least one piece of Sabine's background. Contrary to what is implied, she had a specialization other than artist in the Alliance military. Her contribution to the team was her skill in slicing, what the Star Wars universe refers to hacking, munitions, and sabotage. In other words, she's the perfect person to work with a booby-trapped droid brain. That makes sense.
All right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
She also dyed her hair a lot. It was a different color and or pattern each season. I think had a conversation, like a random conversation in real life with a Star Wars fan that led us, that we were talking about that. And then the final bit I have is about the Padawan braids. You ask a question about what a Padawans do with hairless species. Ahsoka used a length of beads that she attached to her headdress as a braid. It was stripped from her when she was framed for a crime and expelled from the Jedi. She was later exonerated, and Anakin offers her beads and position back, and she refuses them as a major turning point for her on that show. So apparently, and this I got a lot of attestations of this and feedback. This was just the first one I got. I guess there's an Ithorian too that has beads, but you use beads.
All right.
To denote your Padawan status.
It's like when you go to Jamaica, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you get beated up. Uh-huh. Chad says, so I've seen all the live action Star Wars content thus far and dabbled in the Clone Wars animated series. And for me, this Ahsoka series is landing somewhere between Obi-Wan and Mando. It's not Andor, but it's better than the Caravan of Courage. Having not seen any Rebels or attention to the apparently relevant parts of Clone Wars, I definitely feel like I'm on the outside looking in. The anime mural in the beginning was the most obvious. The introduction to Sabine was a little weak and forced. Ahsoka can solve the Rubik's Cube pillars, but not the Rubik's Quidditch snatch. Snitch, rather. Quidditch snatch. That had to be someone's nickname on some Quidditch team on Hogwarts, right? Or at least the American version of Hogwarts. There's no way there hasn't been a Quidditch snatch ever.
She needed Sabine to do the same thing with that ball as she did with the pillars. Anyway, I'll watch the rest of the series regardless. Love listening to you guys. Well, that's sweet, Chad. Yeah, it's a lot of people took me, like, the anime of murals. Like, well, that's what it looked like in the cartoon. That's what it looked like in the cartoon. And so we don't understand this was a drawing that Sabine made in her bunk on the ship or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't look like the Simpsons versions of them in the cartoon, right? It looks recognizably exactly like them. So I'm thinking that as an artist, she probably didn't draw them in an elaborate anime style. I was expecting them to look like an artist would draw them in real life. And I think that when you have that, I mean, I guess if you're a fan of Rebels, maybe you really like that kind of fan service. But for me, it just looks like it'd be the same if you saw like a panel of Luke Skywalker and everybody painted in a Star Wars movie and they were done in the style of like Rick and Morty. Like, what? This is real life, man.
Yeah, I don't know. There are many styles of art and animation and murals. I don't know what the big deal is. I don't know why you're so up in arms against this thing, but sure.
Okay, it's like if we watch a movie about Doom. And like, you know, I don't know, you got something crazy like Carl Urban's the Doom guy.
The Rock.
He was the bad Doom guy. And like at some point there's a family photo of him and it's rendered the art of the Doom guy art, you know? Like the little image of the guy's face that bleeds and takes damage. Like all the family looks in that like pixel art. Like
that's not a photograph. I mean, an artistic interpretation of a thing can look like whatever you want it
to
look
like. Okay,
an oil painting
of his family. And it's done in the art, at the pixel art style of Doom. Okay, apparently that doesn't throw people.
It doesn't throw me.
It throws me. Oh. It throws me like a Bronco horse.
Okay, that's fine.
What do you think about this thing? Because he's right. I don't understand why Ahsoka could twist the Rubik's Cube and match those patterns, but not the...
Yeah,
I guess she didn't have time before the robots jumped her.
What else is she doing? I mean, the robots don't jump her until Sabine gets her hands on it and takes it off world, right? Or off ship.
She had a nice long time in that chamber, too. You know?
Yeah, I don't know why she couldn't.
Sam from Windsor, Ontario. He says, in my YouTube watches, I've come across Ezra is an Inquisitor as well. So he's on the Ezra is probably the Black Sith Inquisitor, Black Robe Sith Inquisitor.
Okay.
But also the character's name, what is it, like Martok or Marok?
Marok, yeah.
Marok is very close to a playable character from the Star Wars The Force Unleashed video game. The game is not considered canon, but this would be my guess for internet points.
I haven't played that whole thing. I started it, but never got through it.
It'd be wild for me if they start canonizing video game stuff.
Because
that was always, to me, the lowest level of canon. Like, you start video game stuff, like, come on. Not even a comic book? We're talking video games?
Although I could do with a dash Rendar. I could do with a little bit of Shadows of the Empire. Chizor? Are they going to bring Chizor back ever, you think?
I don't know. Yeah, I could use... I'm trying to think of the EU I'd be expecting. I like Kyle Katarn if you're going to go video game stuff. Like, but that's what I'm going to get. Like, but he's so old. Like, Kyle Katarn is... That's all Gen X bullshit that no one cares about anymore. You know what was a really formative experience I had this week? I was watching on YouTube. A YouTube short recommended me this podcast where early 20s guys were sitting around. And they were kind of talking old trilogy, new trilogy, prequel trilogy. And one of the kids said that no one watches the old trilogy for any reason other than nostalgia, that they just do not work as movies. They're so old. The effects are so bad. They're so hokey and tropey that no one would willingly sit down and watch those movies over the prequels or the sequels, including Empire. And like one guy was like, you know, like this, you're fucking crazy. But the other guy was kind of like in the middle, taking a side.
I think there are people walking around that just are not going to consider the old trilogy as anything.
Oh, and yeah. Those
blows my mind.
Exist.
It blows my mind.
Yeah, I wonder what the ratio is of people. Because, like, I watch a lot of very bad movies from the 80s with terrible effects that I'm not watching them because of nostalgia. I just watched Trancers the other day. I've not seen Trancers. It's a piece of shit, but it starred Helen Hunt, so I was curious.
okay, this is all right.
I enjoyed watching it. It has terrible effects, but it's if it were as good of a movie as Star Wars is, it would have been an enjoyable watch. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, I can almost see where people are at with A New Hope, because there are some really scenes that don't hold up well, especially if you're looking at the original versions. But man, it's genuinely shocking that people would watch Empire Strikes Back and Jedi and be like, oh, these are fucking dated. Oh, these are so old and
so hokey. One of the things I remember about my experience as a young man with Star Wars was all the gap filling you did, all the headcanon you came up with, because I think there are a lot of holes in those movies. And they just got worse as Lucas kept adding on to them. And that was like part of the fun of it. So that's definitely a nostalgia thing for me, is I look back at those movies and I say, well, you know, this mistake here means that this happened and that happened. And so I've got this headcanon built up over years. If you're going into that movie fresh, you as an adult, you would notice all those holes and you'd be like, well, this is kind of shitty, you know. But overall, I think they probably hold up pretty well.
I do wish I could mind flash myself and watch the first trilogy and see if, like, do you really, because some of those holes are like only holes when you've thought about the movie for a while. You know, it's like when you got to be pretty far off huffing Star Wars farts before you get to like, oh, Obi-Wan says the stormtroopers blaster is so precise, they can't hit the broadside. You have to watch the movie 30, 40 times before you start having those thoughts, I think, but maybe not.
Maybe not. I would say movie watchers nowadays are more sophisticated than a lot of people were in 77, right?
I don't know that that's true. I feel like it was getting true and then cell phones came out and now I think bringing down the literary IQ of people. Because I don't know how many Reddit threads I've seen derailed by people who just are not watching the episode.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry you were catching up with whatever Tommy was posting on Twitter and Facebook and whatever, watching TikTok, but shit was addressed, man.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'd be curious to see what someone who's new to those movies thinks of them, because I can't view them through anything but my own personal lens, which, yes, has a lot of nostalgia in there and has a lot of headcanon.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know. I feel like there's like 5-year-olds walking around right now that are going to worship the sequel trilogy and just bust all the balls of the Gen Xers and millennials that are fighting about the shitty prequel versus original trilogy. They're just
I mean, it already happened with the prequels, right? Now you've got a whole generation of people who grew up with those and are like, actually, they're great.
Yeah.
No, those are pieces of shit. Also, get ready, because The Last Jedi is going to be hailed as something amazing that everyone loves 15 years from now. And you're going to be just as pissed off as we are right now.
It's going to start with r/sequel memes, and your first is going to be, ah, ha, ha, yeah, okay. It's
going to be who's cooler, Snoke or Palpatine, right? Mm-hmm, and then get ready.
Let's see. Steven says, I know you guys touched on this with while covering Mando, but are droids sentient? Some are treated like humans, others like pets, like Chopper. Some are slaves and some as spare parts. While they scan one of the droids' corpses for information, I was very confused. Is there an official policy in universe? The droid war should be the next trilogy.
They're clearly property. I mean, that's kind of a universal, right? They're property. There's very rare exceptions. Like, I don't think Luke Skywalker sees C-3PO and R2-D2 as property anymore, but the Empire did, and his father or his uncle did.
And Han Solo might.
Han Solo probably does. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like down at the very end, he might just be like, what you said about the Droid Wars trilogy, that's actually really exciting because I can think of many, many, many giant science fiction series that allude to a droid war or a robot war or
Watch
robot rebellion.
Right,
yeah, Foundation, Dune, Warhammer 40K. They all have this theme, but like none
the
of
Matrix.
Them ever show it. The Matrix, none of the Terminator, but none of them ever show it. It's always like at the most you might get 2 minutes of a post-apocalyptic chrome robot porn to kick off a Terminator, and then it's back this the present day. It's the Star Wars canon is starting to touch on the fact that droids themselves think this is bullshit, and there's like, yeah, I think that would be a very cool idea. Like, especially if they do something wild, like R2-D2 is leading the droid resistance.
Oh, Jesus.
Right, like so, like a really well-known canonical droid is like well up on the rebel side of the star, and I think
and
that would be
still dragging C-3PO around through the droid wars. Yeah, I would love that.
Well, they're legally married at this point, but I think I think it would be they're the Bell Rios and Clawin of Star Wars. Last Foundation reference. That would be a really, because like honestly, that would be a really awesome direction for Star Wars to take.
It could be if they could do
and
it seriously,
also,
right?
Especially if the robots could like go into like, we're also sick of being excluded, like the treated like second class citizens. So we don't have this connection to the Force, so it binds and stuff all living things, and we're not alive, so we're left out of all the religion. And I think there's a lot of interesting philosophical things you could explore, and it would just it's a cool fucking idea.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess you could argue the Clone Wars is kind of already actually the robot wars.
Not really. I mean, those were clones that were being used for evil purposes. They weren't looking for recognition as sentient beings.
But I think, I think that there are some I think the droids can be created sentient. They have that technology, and they choose that some droids don't. I mean, like, I don't know that I would call the Mark 1, Mod 1 battle droid sentient.
Sure.
I don't know I'd call, like, the gunk power droid sentient. I don't know why you'd make a gunk power droid sentient. Because you can, it's also, like, you can get into I have no mouth, but I must scream territories. Like, imagine making a binary load lifter or a moisture evaporator sentient.
Yeah.
Why? Why would you do that to a being? But that's
a
great
like
idea.
The squeaky edges, right? Like a General Grievous. Where does he fit in? Like he's more machine than man. And
he's
Anakin
like
Skywalker.
Yeah. Darth Vader.
You know,
yeah.
How much machine can you be before you identify with the machines themselves?
That would be really cool. Do you have like the double agents, like Lobot and Darth Vader and General Grievous? Yeah, the cyborgs.
Sure.
But I think I think Steven, that they have this contradiction they just never dealt with, which that our droids are sentient and they are second class entities. That'd be a cool area to explore. Connor says, while I wouldn't be shocked if Marok is Ezra, I'm not sure how that would work. The Purgils jump them really far away, and that's why they need the 9 hyperdrives to go to Thrawn. I think it's 7. Isn't it 7? Maybe it's 9.
It could be 50. I don't know.
Right, it's an arbitrary number. Yeah. Filoni's like, what's a big number, but it's not like impossible? I can't say a million. There probably weren't that many Super Star Destroyers. How about 9? I like it. I'm not sure how he'd be able to get back himself, especially if they're on the same side. Well, I think you just answered your own question. What's this guy, like, crash-landed, lost his memory? All he knows is he's on this dark side planet surrounded by whales. And he uses his affinity that he's already used once to get there to migrate back. And then he crash lands on the Dathomir and the witches take him in. And I don't know.
There's a way back for him, right? He's the guy who controls it. So
yes, he's got the whales with his little Aquaman whistle. So that's how you get back. Connor also says, you're going to love Chopper. He's one of the funniest characters in Star Wars. And fun fact, one of the deadliest. He has 50,000 confirmed kills, making him in the top 20 of the universe. He had to blow up a super weapon, right?
It had to. Star Destroyer something, because... And I want to see the scene where he kills 50,000 people hand-to-hand. That's what I want.
It really tickles me that they're on the other galaxy, that Grand Admiral Thrawn is having a hollow conversation with Darth Swanson and the Witch of Dathomir, and he's like, "You don't understand, Chopper. He killed so many of my friends and family. He's
he
a boss."
Wants to get back for that.
Yeah. Chopper is the Thrawn of the Imperial universe. Steven says, "Good day, gentlemen. I was listening to your Ahsoka podcast and couldn't help but notice that Aaron had a bone to pick with Filoni and on what is canon and what is not. I think you've got a bit of a bone too." Mm-hmm. You're something of a bone picker yourself.
I am. Been known to pick a bone or two.
"I was made aware through a Star Wars specific podcast that Filoni was saddened that all the books were turned in legends, thus making them non-canon. So when Disney tapped him to be executive producer on most of the Disney Star Wars shows, he wanted to recanonize the books he found were of particular interest in the lore and make them canon once more. Not mistaken, he mentioned that the Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy are some of his favorites, that he really wanted to bring them back into canon, which is why he made Thrawn the major antagonist of the series, subsequently making Thrawn a canon character again. So I think he agrees with you that Thrawn is a badass. I hope knowing this gets you to cut Filoni a little slack to see what he's working to undo Disney's decision to make all the books non-canonical." Canonical. What's your response to this? Because I've got a thought.
Do not neglect your training. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, "Hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it."
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Let's see what knowledge is lurking inside this podcast. Here's more Tribe of Two. So there's a link at the end of that, and I read it, and there's not much substance there. It's more like a quote from Filoni that makes it seem like, yeah, he does care. And then a lot of exposition from the article.
I saw a long form interview with him on a Star Wars podcast.
Did you? Okay.
Where he was talking about, I guess he had a talk with George when he was working on Rebels and Clone Wars and just starting the experience. And he's asking George, is like, you know, what's canon, what's this, what that. And George is like, you know, it's the movies and the television shows. Which at that time I think was literally just Caravan of Courage. And Filoni's like, damn.
My opinion on this is that's great if he wants to do that. It's not about doing it. It's about how you do it. And I think it needs to be done a little bit better than it has been.
The year is 2053, and Alpha filmmaker Gabe Pelloni is saddened by Disney's recent decision to decanonize the prequel films. And he's so sad that some of those classic characters are going to escape. So he's bringing General Grievous back. But the deal is he is now a cyborg made out of spare parts of Darth Maul.
Okay.
If you're Love a prequel it. Fan, Green how light. Do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? That's not that big of a change. He's still a cyborg. He's in. He's got the forearms, and maybe he's got a little force sense. He's cooler. He's a better version of General Grievous. And Maul's backstory is a lot more fun anyway. I mean, if you you're either pissing blood now just at the idea of it, or you're like, that sounds cool, and then you probably don't have a problem with any of that. But like, my problem is multifaceted. Number one, I don't know. Like, they got these zombie characters who are like, they're wearing the faces and skins of the people I'm familiar with, but I don't know if their backstory is the same. I don't know if their canon history is the same. And you can kind of do that when you reboot universes. Like, it's fine to do a dark, gritty Batman if you've done Adam West Batman for a while. It's fine to explore like a depressed, unpatriotic Captain America, right? But what Star Wars is trying to do is like do it all in the same canon timeline. Yeah. And that's what's really tripping me, is that like, I've got this multi-dimensional view of like Grand Admiral Thrawn. If they bring things like Mara Jade back, or like Luke Skywalker, is both the guy who I knew from the EU, and he's also the old depressed monk that almost gave it all up in the sequel films. And it gets really weird when, like, because like, I knew more about Star Wars than I knew about anything growing up. Like, it was a singular point of focus for me. And like, what am I supposed to do with all that shit? That's been remixed and jukeboxed and
gonna wipe
your brain. Canon. And what's really funny is like, imagine like being that, and you're a prequel fan and you're arguing with sequel fans about the canon history of Darth Maul, and they're saying that you're dumb and stupid because you don't know anything. Right?
In 2053? Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's the other thing. It's where it's, or they're like, you hate the sequels, and they had a whole successful anime series based on the sequels. And now to enjoy modern Star Wars, you have these people saying, well, it's the reason you don't appreciate it is because you got to go back and watch all seven seasons of fucking Finn and Poe.
All of this comes down to, honestly, it's Jedi syndrome. I think it's one of the biggest problems I have with Star Wars right now is there's too much of it. I think when you make so much of this, you take away what was special about it to begin with. Look, I was born into a time when Star Wars was three movies. You know, you can safely ignore all of the Ewok shit.
Right.
Everyone did. It was three movies. I could sit down in one day and I could take in everything that is Star Wars, and I could get my brain around it and I could understand it intimately. And I think at this point there's just so much Star Wars, and it's like you said, so convoluted with this legend stuff, that now it's impossible to be a fan of all of Star Wars because there's just too much of it.
Yeah.
And it cheapens the experience of being a fan of a franchise, I think.
Yeah, it's weird because that was always the big extreme, like, because I was a Star Trek and Star Wars fan.
Is the problem. It divides people. It's like, I'm a fan of this part of Star Wars. I'm a fan of this other part of Star Wars. Because, like, Star Wars fans always argued amongst themselves, like, who was cooler or whatever. But everybody loved all of Star Wars back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And now that's certainly not true. And started
it's
with
so funny.
Prequels.
Because growing up, like, I was a Star Trek fan and a Star Wars fan. And the thing about Star Wars is, like you said, it's like you watch the three movies, maybe you read a novel or two in later days. But like, you could know everything there was about being a Star Trek. Holy shit. There was an animated series. There was the old 60s series. There was the movies. There was TNG. There was Deep Space
Nine. Voyager.
Hundreds and hundreds of hours of stuff before you could consider yourself like a super fan of that series. Right.
Sure.
And now Star Wars is like, and that's the thing. It's like, well, Star Wars is not as much, but it's superior quality. Whereas Trek is like, there's a lot of it, but it's not. Now, like, Star Wars is kind of the same as Star Trek. There's vast swaths of it that are just a waste of fucking time. And nobody's going to go back and watch, probably. Your average fan is not. And it is fractured. And it's fractioning exactly the way
everyone.
It's fractioning exactly what his Trek fandom was when, like, Next Generation came back. Like, oh, these aren't our... So some of that was inevitable, but, like, the Next Generation had the benefit of eventually becoming good, whereas we're 10 years into this fucking Star Wars experiment, and there's still no universal idea of what the fuck canon is, what is the mainline Star Wars, what is going on in the galaxy. The galaxy, you know, they're not taking the story further. They're still staying in this... kind of like the rebel phase.
I feel like I like the older way of handling franchises where you just reboot them. You say, okay, the old stuff is the old stuff. Now we're doing something entirely new based on the old stuff, and we're going to update the visuals, we're going to update the story just a little bit. And so you can kind of safely ignore the old stuff in favor of the new stuff, because there's almost a one-to-one match there. And
we said...
It's like Battlestar Galactica, right? Battlestar Galactica, they didn't... Well, they tried to do this with Battlestar Galactica with, like, Caprica and all these other Colonial One things. But Battlestar Galactica, you could be a fan of the old stuff, you could be a fan of the new stuff, but they were kind of very similar, you know? I feel like there were generations of people who liked Battlestar Galactica the way that it was meant to be appreciated, whereas now there are, like... Even within generations, there are people who don't like certain aspects of Star Wars and do like other aspects of it.
Yeah.
You can't find just like, oh, here's a new generation of Battlestar Galactica fans. Here's a new generation of Star Wars fans. That doesn't exist because there's so much Star Wars.
And especially since it's like widely variable quality, because it's not like, oh, I don't like the Book of Boba Fett because I'm just not into the bounty hunter stuff. And that's just not, you know, it's just like, I want to be in the Book of Boba Fett, but it sucks. Mm-hmm. And I actually think getting an Obi-Wan Kenobi series with Ewan McGregor is fucking hot. And I would be very interested in watching that, but it sucks.
It sucks. And then there's also the, well, I'm just not into the cartoon stuff, you know? So there's also that element.
Yeah.
There's just too many ways to be a Star Wars fan, because they're trying to be everything to everyone. And so there'll be nothing to some people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've lost the cult religion status, and now we just fragmented into sectarianism. You got the
and
first
it's diminished
church,
everybody's
first
fandom.
Church of the Holy Trilogy. You got the second prequel revival movement. You've got
the Unitarians,
the sequel-tologists say that you know, it's cool that Palpatine returned somehow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just my vague feeling on the thing. I'm trying to figure out where I sit as a Star Wars fan, because I don't hate some of this new stuff.
I just wish
it's also
better.
Very confusing to the fandom.
And I just wish it was. I just think, and
me
I
too.
Think,
Andor,
and I think Star Wars and
example.
Marvel fans, because this is all going back to Disney. Disney's reach has exceeded its grasp, and we're paying the price. Because I think no matter how ardent the Marvel fan you are, Star Wars fan, I think we can all agree we wish Secret War was a little bit, or Secret Invasion was better, right? It wasn't shit. I think we wish the Book of Boba Fett wasn't shit. That Obi-Wan Kenobi wasn't terrible. You know, we want these things to succeed. And they're just not, because they're not caring about doing it at high quality. I mean, even now, if you think Favreau and Filoni are the saviors, we're again 10 years into this fucking experiment. Why did it take so long to find that successful strategy? But I don't know. I'm with you. It's not that I don't like Star Wars anymore. It's just I just none of this stuff is kind of boring and not good. So,
yeah. And you get standouts for sure. I mean, I love Andor. So,
and Mando gets there, and I think this show can get there. They got all the things they need. Like, honestly, having a strong central cast and characters is one of the hardest things to do. I think they've got that. But Jesus Christ, get the Star Wars constipation is strong in this one. Show me something I haven't seen before in Star Wars. That's also if it's not too much to ask, not patently ridiculous. So
here's another thing I feel like we've lost from the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
The adult humor. And I don't mean, I don't, what I mean is like tell a joke that an adult can appreciate that isn't, yes. you know, a droid
family
conking around being stupid. You know, like George Lucas fucked that entire thing up. With
someone stepping in dog shit.
Someone and that has been the tone for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
Almost 25 years. Get out of that mode. Let's have a Han Solo character who can quip, who can actually say something that an adult will appreciate in a wry way.
Yeah, because that's the one thing Andor doesn't have a lot of. It doesn't have that humor.
No.
Yeah. Not a funny show.
No.
Let's move on to Drew, who's got some Kyber crystal knowledge for us. The Sith duo, if you've noticed, and he puts in Sith in quotes, has orange lightsabers. You can notice the distinction in how Marek's saber is much more red compared to theirs. I thought the Jedi looked different, and I wondered if they changed the lightsaber effect a little bit, but I didn't notice past that opening scene, so okay. I think what I noticed is their weird color. New canon states that to get a red lightsaber crystal, you have to corrupt and bleed a regular Jedi lightsaber, putting all of your hate into it. So we weren't wrong when we were speculating about you got to corrupt it. So the orange lightsaber is a bit of a mystery since it's between red and yellow. In old canon, it sometimes connotates that a user is a gray Jedi. Maybe the Sith duo only minorly corrupted their sabers. Fun fact, Ahsoka's sabers are white because she defeated an Inquisitor and purified their crystal, making the Kyber crystal white. Let me ask you this, because this is another thing. I was watching a lot of Star Wars commentary, checking out some of the competition, and apparently the idea of gray Jedi is not a lot of people's favorites. How do you feel about the idea of gray Jedi? Like a Kyle Katarn type. He might force choke a bitch. He might force lightning a motherfucker. But ultimately...
Look, there are two ways to balance the force, right? You can have extremely dark and extremely light Jedi. That'll balance it. Or you can have a bunch of them in the middle. That's balance, too. I don't have a problem with gray Jedi. I think, like... Look, if the temptation is so strong to the dark side... then of course there are going to be people who are like halfway there but resisting it.
I mean, maybe if you objected them calling themselves Jedi, that's fine.
Sure,
but like, I think disillusioned Jedi that have left the faith and have added a little bit of love and anger to their emotional repertoire, and then they might have some force lightning, and they might like Luke Skywalker force choked a bitch canonically in Return of the Jedi, and then he was wearing all black and turns out he wasn't evil. So it's like, I think first of all, there's huge rooms for other non-Jedi, non-Sith force traditions, which, you know, they're getting into with the witches and all that stuff. That's very cool. I'd like to see more of that, please. But also, I don't understand why people like, oh, it's got to be Jedi or Sith. That's the whole point. I mean, I guess I just... Like every
what do you
Jedi
call yourself
that
when
decides...
you're on the way to corruption by the dark side,
a renegade Jedi. I like the idea of like renegade Jedis and dark Jedis and that are not full Sith, but they're just like, you know, they've given in to selfishness or acquisition of power and wealth or whatever Darth Swanson's deal is. So I don't know. I just because I always thought that was an inherently cool concept, and it never made sense to me. It's like, well, why? Is force lightning evil? And it's like, well, it's only for attack and not defense. Well, what if you have to like neutralize this crowd of stormtroopers that are butchering a bunch of civilians? You just bathe them with force lightning and suddenly you're evil? I don't know. Anyway, Drew says, I've always appreciated your coverage of these shows and your unshakable integrity to never watch any cartoons. We now have a blood oath. If you listen to this podcast and you haven't already, you have to refuse to give in to the temptation of watching Rebels and Clone Wars. We will find out, and we will unsubscribe you from our podcast remotely.
It's an opt-out blood oath. You have to specifically write into us and tell us you don't accept the blood oath. Yeah,
you do. If you see an Imperial droid bobbling outside your window, it's because he's unsubscribing your podcast. It's quite irrevocable.
We have the finest slicers working for us. I'm a big fan of all Star Wars made past 2000, so your view as older fans have made me think more objectively if these shows are actually any good. I'm 23 and have grown up in a generation that loves the prequels, both Clone Wars TV shows, Rebels, and the good live-action Disney shows. Hearing Aaron's thoughts on how he doesn't enjoy them, using Heir to the Empire as a big name drop to appease old fans, made me put myself in your shoes. If I was in my mid-40s and a new shoe came out that would use the name drop of Clone Wars and just cherry-pick... Yeah, I mean, this is the thought experiment we just went through.
Mm-hmm.
These live action shows always fascinate me because they bring up the age old questions of how new or casual viewers of fandom jump into new or spinoff series without the unnecessary backstory or comprehension of lore. For example, I've only recently watched the newest Star Trek movies. Would you recommend me to jump into Strange New Worlds? I've heard good things, but my lack of understanding of the lore makes me hesitant to invest the time. And this is how I imagine you view Ahsoka as well. It's funny because like I think Strange New Worlds is a particularly good point to jump into the Star Trek canon.
Totally.
Because it's kind of like a prequel to the whole fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know anything about Spock and Vulcans at all, you are ready to enjoy the series. Yeah. And maybe Ahsoka, because like people said that. It's like, well, you're jumping into Ahsoka's Rebel Season 8, so what are you expecting? But again, I maintain if they wanted this to be Rebel Season 8, they should have called it Rebel Season 8, and then I would have known not to watch it. Mm-hmm. Ahsoka means they are building those, and I don't have any problems. Like none of the things they've done from the backstory, when people tell me, it's like I appreciate the extra detail, but I was never like, oh fuck, I had no idea what was going on. You know,
it's like the Book of Boba Fett being Mandalorian season 1.2.5. Like it's
yeah, you know, Mando season 2 was somehow Ahsoka season 0.1.
Like, uh-huh. It's they've kind of really messed that stuff up.
Well, the thing is, this is the thing that I worried about with the Disney Plus of everything. I really worried that they'd be making so much stuff that it would no longer feel like must see things. Like the one or two Marvel movies that came out, if you were a nerd, felt like kind of must see events. You wanted mm-hmm. to get you wanted to see them opening night because you didn't want to get spoiled. This Star Wars and Marvel stuff on the television has never felt that way to me. From the jump, they always felt like, and you can kind of feel like, there's this one thing. We got to get Julie Louis-Dreyfus into the universe. So this 15 minutes of this Captain America Falcon shit's important. And then everything else is just kind of clearing our throat. Why are we waiting for to use these characters for the next movie, right? And Star Wars is that, except for they don't even have a larger overarching universe that feels cohesive that they're trying to work towards.
Yeah, and they're kind of really, in a way, it's becoming, everything is becoming must-see because, you know, as much as Book of Boba Fett is season 2.5 of Mandalorian, Mandalorian season 3 is also season 1.5 of Book of Boba Fett, right? Like, you absolutely have to see the Book of Boba Fett to get some of what's happening in Mandalorian season 3.
I don't know if you have to, but it's a damn shame that those two episodes are the corn kernels in the biggest, densest, toughest turd that you could possibly imagine.
Right. So I feel like they're trying to make it must-see TV. And I guess in some ways they're succeeding. It's just that I don't care to watch all of it.
That's
so
what I'm saying. Like
my experience.
Must see isn't like a homework assignment that like if you miss this lecture, that lecture.
It's supposed
to be an
excitement
level. Must see means like
yeah.
You were like appointment. Like it's so good that you can't mm-hmm. wait until seeing the next thing. This is
only
homework
Andor
television.
Has been that.
This is assignment television.
Uh-huh.
not must see television. Finally, we have Kurt, who says, in support of Aaron's point about lightsaber wounds and to Jim's comment about being cut in half being a bit more difficult to survive, don't forget the Darth Maul was canonically sliced in half by Obi-Wan before being miraculously resurrected by Filoni during the Clone Wars series and lived on through several great arcs during that series. The Rebel
I've
show
heard.
And a blink and you'll miss it cameo in the Solo movie. I did not blink mm-hmm. and I did not miss that one. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's like some of these people that were complaining about the lightsaber through the gut are Clone Wars fans. Did you just hate Darth Spider-Maul?
I mean, I can understand that. Cutting a man in half and then having him come back as a spider seems pretty stupid.
cutting a man in half and throwing him to the bottom of a reactor core on a hostile enemy world.
It seems pretty stupid.
But Sabine can't take a saber through her appendix and, you know.
That seems survivable to me.
Be within sight of a New Republic city with resources. And yeah, I thought so too. But that's it. That's it for Ahsoka this week. We're closing the mailbag. StarWarsAboldMove.com if you'd like to get your licks in. Otherwise, we'll be back for next week to see if... you know, they can move the plot a little bit further this time. If you'd like to keep up with all the other things we're doing, we mentioned Justified. We're wrapping up this series, that series this week. We're in the middle of a really excellent second season of Foundation. Again, if you're a science fiction fan, oh boy, I think you'll really like Foundation. We're getting ready for Daryl.
They cut Jared Harris in half and bring him back as the spider.
Threw him down a reactor well. It's insane. What was I? Oh, you derailed me. Oh,
sorry.
We got the Daryl Dixon Walking Dead coming up. We got Fargo later in the season. Season five now? And I know I'm leaving off at least. Oh, Loki. Speaking of Disney Marvel television, I like. I saw the trailer of that. That looked really good. Disney's Loki season two. If you want to follow everything that we're doing, social media is your best friend. Pick one, your favorite one, at Bald Move. We're there. Unless it's TikTok. I lied. We're at Baldest Move there. Finally, if you'd like to support us, support.baldmove.com. It's how you join the club and get ad-free feeds and tons of other bonus audio video content. That's it for the week. We'll see you next time. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.